This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Ever write a college essay that comes back to haunt you? Most of us just got a B- and moved on with life. But Brian Koberger's Crime Scene Scenario Final from 2020, a mock investigative report for his criminal justice class, is now sitting in the courtroom. Potentially as one of the prosecution's more chilling pieces of evidence. What happens when your academic work eerily mirrors real-world crimes and you're accused of committing them? Joining us, retired FBI special agent, host of the Break the Case podcast, Jennifer Coffendaffer, with decades of experience analyzing crime suspects, behavioral patterns. She's a perfect person to help us unpack this one. Jen, when you see a suspect who's literally written the step-by-step guide on how not to get caught at a murder scene, does that automatically raise red flags, or is it just another life in the day of a criminology PhD student?
Well, I think it's so important to bring this up to the jury. Mm-hmm. The jury is going to want to understand why he actually committed almost the perfect crime, but for that sheath that led them, you know, to him, he did so well, really. He mm-hmm. covered up well. He even talks about in his paper, Tony, about how he would use a hairnet. I keep wondering if he used a hairnet in this scenario. We don't know because there's so much evidence that they still don't have, mm-hmm. including his clothing and the murder weapon. But he talks about all the details of not leaving any fingerprints and very specific on how to get out of a crime scene without being detected.
And he almost did, except, oops, you left the sheath. Whoopsie. But no, I mean, it does. It goes into great detail. It's not just, well, it's a kind of, you know, amateur hour optics on how you think you should get out of it. We're talking about fiber-free overalls and gloves mm-hmm. and things like that, going into like, okay, he's knowing what type of products to specifically buy, not just, hey, let's go and grab whatever seems to be the best deal that day at Dick's. It's no, these specific things are what we need to go for. Again, how damning is that in a case like this, considering the report was done in 2020, quite a ways before these things ever took place, maybe before he even had thought about doing something like this? Or what do you think here? Has this been a lifelong pattern leading up to this moment that he was planning for?
I think it really was. I think this goes, if indeed he committed this crime, mm-hmm. this is something that was so deep-seated and so much anger that had built up. And then you combine that with his, you know, wanting to be in the criminal justice system and being turned down really at almost every term mm-hmm. other than his situation that he had as a guard at his old school. Mm-hmm. Other than that, turned down yeah. and just the buildup of rejection and everything. So I think he definitely was looking through both lenses, the lens of the perpetrator as well as law enforcement. And we know that, Tony, because he talks about it. Yeah. He talks about what somebody would be thinking if they were going to commit a murder with a knife. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was interesting because this was supposed to be about crime scene analysis. But no, yeah. you're getting in their head. And he talks about it being, you know, somebody who would be super passionate. And then he also says, though, that it would be an act of impulsivity. Some might argue this wasn't impulsive. This was planned out. I would argue that, yes, overall, it was very planned out. But the impulse he got that night mm-hmm. to do this murder that night, I think it shows impulse.
Do you think it was the murder that night? Do you think he was planning for that night specifically, or is that the impulse? Was it he's sitting over there in Pullman and going, I feel like going and killing tonight. Like, this is going to be it. I got it. Let's go. Let's do it. Do you think that there could have been other nights where he was going to do it, where we've seen the cell phone data pinging that he's, you know, kind of surveilling the house and such? Like, it could have been any of those nights. It's just the mood finally struck him. He finally got the urge or the courage to do something like this.
That's exactly what I think, Tony. And I think part of the reason that this is supported is because he did not conduct appropriate surveillance before doing this crime. He didn't know, I don't believe, that Kaylee was there and driving that new vehicle of hers. He did not know who was going to be there. I think he was absolutely shocked when he went into Maddie's room and Kaylee was laying next to him. He didn't do the appropriate surveillance to figure out who was there, and that shows impulse.
How did he not think of those parts of this, though, when you have so many other elements just super detailed of what he needs to bring, how he needs to do it, but yet one of the biggest pieces where you could get caught or killed yourself if somebody fights back well enough? Those are the things that he was, that there were the impulsivity is part of it. But why even make that part of the equation when you're the one executing the plan?
Well, I think a couple of things in the mind of people, I believe, that commit these crimes, they don't think they're going to get caught. They have this whole idea of how it's going to play out. They're going to enter. It's going to be smooth. They're going to walk up the steps. They're going to commit their crime. I think he had much more planned for Maddie as well. I do believe this was a sexual type of crime, I believe. And I think that because of how everything played out, his thought process of how things were going to go sort of imploded. Mm-hmm. But remember, that's part of all of this, believing you are conquering everything. Mm-hmm. That's how much power you have over everything, no matter who's there or the circumstances. He thought he could overcome it.
How do you think the defense of Koberger is going to argue about the report in court and try and gain any sort of traction with it?
Well, you mean with the defense or the prosecution? Sorry, Tony.
The defense of Koberger. How are they going to, because when it comes up, how are they going to argue and say, okay, yes, he wrote this report. I know it'll go to, well, he's a criminology student, but I mean, come on. I mean, just the details of what he's talking about there, so much in line with what reality was, if it's him.
Well, and you pointed it out earlier in your question, and that is, listen, this happened in 2000. This was part of a normal assignment, you know, a final that many people wrote about. And they would have had details like Brian Koberger had. This is normal work for that level of student. That's how I would argue it, that it's very general. I would probably try to bring up other examples, and that it's the prosecution is just reaching here, trying to connect the two.
Obviously, it looks really, really creepy, but there are a lot of other pieces of evidence in this case that go beyond just the report. And the report, yeah, it's definitely creepy. But before we move on from the report, are there any other elements of the report from what we've seen of it? Have you seen the whole thing, or have you just seen the, what, you know, we've all seen just the kind of bits and pieces that have been coming out here?
No, I've read the whole thing.
You have?
It's long. It's 12 pages. Yeah.
Is it out?
I read the whole thing.
I haven't seen it yet. Okay. Well, I got to.
Yeah, I posted it.
Oh, okay.
I posted on my Twitter very early on, like day one or two of hearing about it.
What else has stood out to you?
A couple of things. I thought it was interesting how he described strip searching, meaning investigators can use different sorts of search methods, like a whirl method. In other words, how do you go about searching a room? Do you go in a circular pattern? Do you go up and back? Do you go in quadrants and boxes and search to make sure you get everything and don't miss everything? Remember, investigators are looking for every minor detail that's in their crime scene. And he, in the paper, talks about strip searching. And I found that interesting. And, you know, I just found it interesting because I wondered if that affected how he went throughout that house. In other words, in a straight line, knowing that if they did a strip search method, you know, that in other words, he would leave nothing else on 90% of the place. He would know just to go back and forth within the one strip, and that's it. Not leave any of himself anywhere else. So that kind of caught me that was his preferred method of searching. I wondered if he thought about that when he was thinking about going in.
Yeah, And then when you combine it with the questions that he was asking and the DeSales, you know, question thing that we saw very early on, where it was very much about, how do you feel? How did this make you feel? I found those to be interesting aspects of his study, the emotional part of it and trying to get to the psychology behind of it, part of it. Or I do now, it's easier with hindsight being 2020. Was he looking for a guide on how he should feel if he's going to do this sort of thing because he doesn't know how to feel about doing something like this or is incapable of having any sort of emotion about such acts, and he's looking for guidance from others?
Well, yes. And I say this because we know in his own words, very early on when he was talking about visual snow mm-hmm. and everything he was going through, he said, I can't empathize.
Yeah.
He said he knows he treats his father horribly, but he doesn't even care. He just has no, I'm paraphrasing, but that's his message. He doesn't have the ability to empathize. And so I think he was asking and saying, what are you normal people like? Mm-hmm. or somebody who's been through it? What should I be feeling? What should I think? And that's really a travesty, right? That he had lost very early on, it would seem, the ability to empathize with anyone.
Yeah. And that would explain the ability to do something like this if you don't have any sort of empathy. There's obviously a lot of other pieces of evidence that we have not fully seen the details of, like what are we getting here? What do you think we're going to see pulled back from behind the curtain at some point, whether it's in trial or whether it's through new things being unsealed? There's the dog hair, there's the mattress pieces, there's a lot. There's the hard drives, there's all sorts of stuff. What sort of nuggets are still to come in your opinion, just conjecture?
Number one to me is that digital evidence. You know, they caught him in a sense by surprise. Obviously, he had gotten rid of a lot of evidence, but we saw that picture, you know, the famous thumbs up picture in front mm-hmm. of the shower. I think we're going to see so much more showing premeditation and showing what he planned and just Googling different ideas and thought processes. I also think we're going to see a lot post-murder. Mm-hmm. In other words, just incessantly Googling and reading up on what was going on in the case. I think that's something we're going to see that's going to be interesting. This, again, is just from my experience, mm-hmm. not because I know that that's what has happened. I also really, Tony, find the information under Maddie Mogan's fingernails important. And I understand they are not able to conclusively say it's Brian Koberger, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's a huge thing to be able to say. And it's three different DNA profiles.
Sure.
I think likely, of course, Maddie Mogan's is one. That's an obvious. And was it Kaylee? And then was it Brian? Mm-hmm. We don't know, but there's some probability that's been attached. And the defense is fighting hard to get that probability out. So even though they can't conclusively say it's him's, apparently there's a probability. And I think those are the kinds of things we're going to continue to see, not conclusive mm-hmm. matches, but possibles.
Well, I want to talk about another piece. I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about the ID, because we're still kind of on evidence with that. Early on, there's the ID in the glove box that was discovered. And I know early on there had been talk that this was connected to the King Road house. Have we ever gotten true clarity on that piece? Where does that all stand in terms of, is it connected to the house or is it just some random IDs that were found?
No, this is something I truly want to know myself.
Yeah.
Source information came into News Nation mm-hmm. Specifically saying that there were IDs in a box in a glove at the house in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Just to be clear, it wasn't in the glove box. Okay. That was confusing at first, but okay. It was in the box. And so, and truly you can see on the, what we call it FD 597, the FBI's form of collecting evidence, that there were IDs mm-hmm. from the box. So there was some match there. And then the question is what the source reported true? Is one of those IDs in some way mm-hmm. connected to 1122 King Road, because that was the source information. So I will be very interested to see if that pans out. We also have, of course, the Papa Roger.
Yes.
That just remains like this little marionette. I haven't discussed him a lot this go around.
Yeah.
There was a lot of information that, you know, that has been debunked, you know, by a lot of the sleuths want to debunk it. I don't know, because I do know this. The same source that gave Dateline the information about the knife being purchased from Amazon, mm-hmm. which we know completely panned out,
yep.
is that same source. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that seems like a pretty good source. And remember, people in the media have amazing sources.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing it their whole lives, and they keep them, you know, under wraps. They have a good connection with them. And, you know, so I take a lot of stock in what a lot of these sources come out and say, although, you know, I don't really quote a lot of sources personally.
Sure.
But I know they have great sources.
I remember, I haven't talked to you about this yet, because we haven't talked for a week or two when I was gone. But here's some interesting things I've kind of put together on this with the Papa Roger, with the shower picture and all of that. It seems there's a lot of wanting to either taunt the public or taunt the families or taunt something. You have the Papa Roger, obviously. And a lot of people have speculated. Obviously, the picture of Papa Roger and him looks pretty damn similar. and then you have the name itself. And if you look at, if we're assuming he's kind of incel-like, whether he was participating in forums or whatnot, I think is irrelevant. I think you can have that sort of ideology without even being in that sort of world. But obviously, Elliot Rogers, the incel that killed all those people, Papa Roger, they look at him like he's some sort of folk hero for these men who don't have empathy and can't deal with women, and they just blame the world other than themselves being an incel. To me, that seems like a very big nod to him. The shower picture out there, and everybody's looking at the thumb and all that, and I don't know, I can't tell much on that. But the fact that the shower picture looks a lot like American Psycho, and the guy who has the big white tidied up jacket on or smock or whatever it was looks a lot like the white shirt he was wearing. That to me feels like it's some sort of a nod to American Psycho. The fact that it's in a shower is a nod to Psycho. He's not that far of a character different than Norman Bates and feels very put off by society. You know, he's been like made fun of, he's not liked, and it's, I'm going to show you all who's the smartest. I'm going to go live out in front of the world with all of you and have committed these crimes. He goes to Costco and Albertsons the morning of it after taking this sort of a picture. It feels like he really thought he was smarter than the rest of the room, and I think there's a deeper meaning to the shower picture, and I think it plays in very well with the Papa Roger thing where he was online knowing information no one else knew. It was a screw you, I'm smarter than everybody. Oh, crap, you know about the car? That's a red herring, but knows everything else. What's your thoughts on all that? I know it's conjecture, but I think there's a lot to that shower picture and him just going out there and poking society with a stick, going, ha-ha, ha-ha.
Well, I've always said if he ends up being Papa Roger,
mm-hmm.
which, again, there's...
You know,
we don't have confirmation of that and can't until the metadata is explored. But boy, he would be, and this is why it fascinated me so much, and I spent hours on it, is because it's the idea that this would be modern age taunting. The mm-hmm. first real, you know, the first killer that would have been using social media in this vein to taunt police, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you had BTK on his, you know, typewriter sending, you know, letters to the police and you know, the Zodiac killer similarly, right? Things like that. This is modern day. I can reach the world with my taunts. I can talk about the sheath before anyone talks about the sheath. I can put my face out there. my entire face on that, which looks just like him.
Exactly.
And this was before anyone even knew the name Brian Koberger.
Exactly.
There were just so many clues. If you look back right after this crime was committed, I tell you, I spent more time on Papa Roger than I spent dozens and dozens and dozens of hours and exploiting all of those details. You brought the red herring up.
Yeah.
You know, hey, don't look over here. That car probably isn't a good idea. But I agree with you. And just the use of the name Roger. Mm-hmm. Everybody uses Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
Roger, Elliot Roger, not Rogers, right? Papa Roger, not Rogers. It's just there's a lot of entanglement there that if it ends up being somebody else, that person is close to clairvoyant. So, yeah, you know, I don't know if it is or isn't him, but like I said, I agree with you that if it is him, it was absolute taunting in your face. Yeah. Look at what I did, and I can even put my face on it.
Well, and you brought up BTK too, and obviously, I mean, I've known about that, but when you put it all in context with if this is him taunting people, obviously he studied under Catherine Ramsland, who wrote the book on BTK, you know, had all the conversations with him. So he knew this was something that people like this do, and if he was looking up to him, again, it's his modern day version of putting the weird things in the Wichita Eagle like BTK did. And this is him doing it on social media. It's the same sort of thing, taunting. And yeah, there's just so many weird pieces that come together there. But again, I think that's where you get the narcissism and I'm smarter than everybody else in the room and doesn't really realize that people will put the pieces together eventually.
Yeah. And you know, that picture could also prove, to be evidentiary in another sense. So we know the eyebrows, they're going to use it for the eyebrows.
Yeah.
But at least from the picture, from what we can see, look at the bruising down below the hand, exactly where you would grab somebody, kind of at the wrist area, if you were trying to ward off, you know, being stabbed to death. And, you know, I saw that and, you know, they might not be able to photograph him right after because it took him 5 weeks to find him, but he's photographed himself. Are there other photographs of himself?
That would be interesting. And it would also be interesting to show, does he have a pattern of taking selfies of himself? If he does not, and there just happens to be suddenly these selfies being taken immediately after the murder, or even if it's just the one, that certainly shows a deviant in behavior than otherwise he would be displaying. If he's always taking selfies in the mirror with thumbs up, maybe it's his morning ritual. Well, then it's a little less of an argument, but I don't take him as a selfie type of guy. Doesn't really seem like that, but I could be wrong.
And I want to hear, and I think that they're going to be able to show, I want to know what he's listening to, because I'm just convinced that that there is going to be music that he relates to this crime that gets him excited, that brings it all back, and that's why he has those, you know, his earphones in, and I want to know what the song is.
That's another good one. I want to see his Netflix history. I want to see his streaming history of videos, because I'm curious, because if this is a nod over here to Psycho, American Psycho, all that, I'm curious if he's like obsessively watching things like that. I'm curious if they found anything in his home, if they found a DVD copy of it, or maybe VHS or whatever. And if there's anything in those boxes, if there's anything, it's almost, you know, this little piece that would be almost something you would put on an altar if you're this obsessed with something. I'm very curious about those specific items, if they are there, what he's going to be found to have with it, or the streaming history and frequency of which he's watching things of that nature. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be very, very interesting when this comes up. In August, right? Is this when we're starting it?
Yes, August. We're set for August. I mean, you and I have discussed this a lot. I will have to pick my jaw off the ground if it goes in August, but I will say Judge Hippler is moving things right along. I haven't seen yet any motions for continuance. Those would be submitted not by the prosecution, but the defense. I will be shocked. I'm still going to stick with that. I'll be shocked if we go in August, but they seem to be, you know, moving in that direction at a fast pace.
They sure do.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.